and welcome to episode 157 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars. And joining me this week are the creator of the brilliant webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man that, if he was an ice cream, of course he'd be a feast. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Welcome back, Tony.
I'm back. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. After
good
a week
show
off.
Last week, guys. Probably
thank
better
you.
Than me not being there.
Yes.
Nah,
thank you.
Always missed.
Yeah. Always missed. Even when he's here. And this week, as well as the returning Tony Esmond, we are joined by not one, but two creators. Yes, it's going to be a bumper show, this one. They're responsible for the hugely popular virtual reality-bending cyberpunk series Drugs and Wires, which not only has a great following, but it's also tearing up Kickstarter as we speak. I'm sure we're going to talk about that a bit later as well. So it's our pleasure to welcome Mary Safro and Io Black to the show. Hello, guys.
Hiya.
How are you?
Yeah, you're right.
We are good.
You guys haven't actually spoke that much to get in person or online. Is that correct?
No, not really.
Last time I've spoken to Io was 2 years ago at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I did kind of a parachute drop into Thought Bubble. I worked the con with her for a couple hours and then skedaddled. Other than that, the only other significant voice conversations we've had are the continuous butt dialing I do on Skype. You laugh, but it's practically weekly occurrence.
Mary,
I am old. I don't do technology very well.
I should buy like a phone case or something.
I have a phone case. Just you know.
Oh no! Trouble in paradise.
Oh dear! Which makes the oncoming conversation about collaboration even more interesting. So yeah, we've got two creators who are working together on a great comic from different parts of the world, shall we say? And and it's churning it out pretty regularly. They're putting together a great Kickstarter, so we're going to be talking a lot about that today and how it all started to begin with. So it's going to be very interesting. But before that, I don't have a segue, so here's the sponsorship.
No.
Normally, I've got some magnificent segue, but I think as we speak, the summer heat has melted my brain and it stopped working. So, but thank you to Comic House who sponsored this lovely show. Yes, surely yes. You've heard about it by now. We've got a lot of regular listeners, and they know Comic House, and they probably use it. But for those who don't know, Comic House is the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a massive selection of titles on their database, and if you self-publish, then you should definitely list your book, because you can list it for free. And when you sell a copy, like a hard copy, Comic House will only take 1p commission, which is awesome, because every penny counts in this self-publishing world. They have a feature section on their site and also have their own app, would you believe it? It's like Netflix for comics, which is such a good line that I don't think I'll never use anything else apart from Netflix for comics. Oh. So, yeah, it's only £3 a month for the subscription. You get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. Now, what great stuff can they find on Comic House at the moment, Dan?
Yes, Dan. Well, the featured print indie comics are Tales of the Mystery, Lizard Men, Radio On, Meanwhile, Comic House issue 10, Little Heroes issue 1, which is currently running Kickstarter for issue 2, A Kid Monkey, Threadbare and Other Stories by a friend Alan Henderson, and another issue of Comic House. So as Vince said, not only can you get these titles on the app, they're also available to buy as hard copy from the site. I was mentioned during the week I got my one of my payments through from Comic House. It's more than I've ever got from
Comixology.
Yeah,
that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's loads of good stuff on there, but just to pick out what you said there, that Radio On is well worth a look.
Yeah,
we reviewed that a few weeks ago, didn't we? Yeah, 3 months ago.
Yeah,
it's all good. But
there's a lot of good stuff on there.
Yeah,
and
I have
the Comixology subscription going, so I can buy one can of drink per year. See me through the hard times.
Good old Comixology. Well, we love it. I read it every week, but you know, I'm not going to make a car payment with what I'm making.
No,
not yet. Anyway, one day I'm going to make
it. This is a Matchbox.
Yeah.
I better say Hot Wheels, otherwise the audience won't get that.
Oh yeah, is that what it is now? Hot Wheels? Is that how it's gone?
I don't think Matchbox exists anymore.
Oh, okay.
Really? I thought they do.
Perhaps they do. I don't know.
Oh, this is a completely different show. Anyway, Comic House, That's where you can get some hot reads. No, that's a terrible segue. Awful.
You've gone Partridge.
Yeah, I've gone completely Alan Partridge. So, but if you want to find out more then and start your 14-day free trial, then just go to comichouse.com and find out more today. So there you go.
Well done.
We always say to our guests, be prepared for a terrible, terrible sponsorship ad. And they've witnessed it firsthand. So.
And if you want to sponsor us, we'll tear up your product as well.
We will absolutely ruin your product.
Oh, come now, that wasn't so bad.
Oh, thank you.
It's actually one of the better ones, I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You have a nice, smooth rhythm.
Oh, thanks.
Tony's known for that.
Yeah. Doesn't take long, but it comes across quite quickly.
Oh, my God. Yes. Well, I've actually written a script for myself now for those sponsorship ads, so they run a lot smoother than they did 6 weeks ago, let me tell you.
I think you'll find I'm in charge of scripts.
Oh, God. Yeah. We all know what your scripts are like. Anyway, and that's just the comic scripts, and that's what we're here to talk about, comics. Comics, of course, and we've got two creators, so let's not waste any time and start talking to them, shall we? Drugs and Wires, such a long-running webcomic, to say the least. When did this start? I mean, because Dan Butcher's, you've been running a webcomic for years as well, haven't you, Dan? Did that start at the same sort of time? What years?
You make me sound old. But no. It's only been going for 2 years.
You are quite 2 years. You're in your late 60s.
Well, to be fair, it's got a bit more of a prehistory that goes beyond just the webcomic as it is. I mean, how long was it kicking around before that?
Lay the origin on us, I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the origin of Drugs and Wires?
Yeah.
I mean, Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I kind of started it like 5 years ago. And it wasn't really a comic. It was just sketches I did on Tumblr. I had this old character of mine I had, and I had nothing to do with my evenings. So I started just drawing his miserable life. And then it just kind of just went out of control.
Yeah.
What? And then you decided you needed a story to go with it. I mean, you say miserable life. Did you just create a character that you just wanted to treat horribly?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. It was just making me feel better.
Yeah. I feel like we're entering a counselling session. So it started with you, did it, Mary? Is the idea?
Yeah. Well, I didn't join me until 2 years later, because at some point people on Tumblr were like, "Hey, we want a comic. We want to see an actual story with these characters." But it was really difficult for me to do. I just liked this comic strip format. I did an experimental GIF animated comic called Dream Space, and it was pretending to have a story, but it wasn't really quite there. So it wasn't until Aya joined me that we started making a proper world building for it and everything.
So how did the two of you get in touch in regards to Aya taking on the writing duties?
Well, that's kind of a funny story, because it's one of those really weird moments of internet serendipity that you get from time to time. It was 2014. I set up a Tumblr account, which is, a perfectly normal thing for a grown man to do. At the time, I really hadn't planned to do much with it beyond just kind of follow some of the creators who were active on Tumblr, kind of keep up with their posts, share some of my own weird interests, and in the process of looking for material, I started combing through looking for fan art of, what you might call less popular properties. So some interesting stuff from China Miéville's Railsea, for example. And then I did a search for a book that was very influential for me when I first read it back in the 90s, which was Jeff Noon's Vert. Just very kind of a dreamlike, phantasmagorical sort of spin on cyberpunk. And really tremendous novel, really meant a lot to me, really kind of opened my eyes in terms of what you could do as a writer and in terms of narrative possibilities. So I poke around for Vert fan art and found this very interesting piece of two of the characters in the novel, the Crusties, this pair of lovers whose hair had matted together in kind of this one continuous tangle. Really kind of an unusual choice for fan art. Really kind of incidental characters almost. It had this wonderful yellow cast. I thought to myself, this is interesting, what kind of person would do this? And I poked around the account and I discovered all these kind of very bleak, darkly humorous, very cynical kind of throwback cyberpunk comics, this one poor guy who, you know, just was continuously getting kicked in the nutsack by life. And, you know, I thought, hey, this is kind of cool. You know, I'll follow this person, see what she's up to. And then at some point, maybe you'll remember this better than I do, but you were talking about some element of the setting and you were complaining about not being able to really figure out a name for something. And then I tossed a bunch of ideas out there, just spur of the moment. And your immediate response was, can I hire you?
Okay.
And
nice.
For
I have like no memories of it happening, but I don't really remember stuff like as a whole. I use like my external hard drive.
Yeah,
stuff.
I joke I'm the external brain. I should dig up that exchange, though, because it was really kind of interesting. And for whatever reason, that kind of sparked a bit of back and forth and talking. And eventually, we got to a point where I was like, well, I love what you're doing with Dan, with this whole cyberpunk theme you've got going on. And I'd love to help you develop it and get it to a point where, you know, if you're looking at developing an ongoing story... but something that absolutely would be ecstatic to help out with. And kind of evolved from there. Originally, I was just saying, like, okay, well, what are your ideas? Let's figure out how to structure this. I made you some spreadsheets, as you do, that I think
those.
Yeah. I come from a business background, so I tend to get the organization aspects a little bit... I tend to overdo that a bit. And then that got into script editing. I did some dialogue work on the last installment of Dream Space 3.03. Then we did that one comic, The Arm. And then we started developing the comic in earnest. And it's been kind of a interesting, challenging, but certainly never boring ride since then.
So before you came on, Io, it was just a kind of it was a conceptual sort of idea with characters and stories and stuff. But there never really an end game in mind, Mary? You just had this idea that you just wanted to make these comics of this guy that you're just going to treat awfully for a long time.
I think so. Like, I wasn't really thinking about like making a webcomic because it just seemed like a lot of work. Mm. I tried making a webcomic at some point. I had absolutely no script. I think I had maybe like 6 pages planned out, and I drew those 6 pages and I realized I don't know what I'm doing, so I stopped.
Yeah.
And from there, like, it was just like a stream of consciousness. Like, the whole first part of Dream Space, it was just like me churning out GIFs and then being like, okay, this should probably be a story. I should like pretend it's a story at least. So that's kind of how I work.
Yeah.
And working with Ayu is great because he's good at doing things I either don't like or don't know how to do. Like, all the writing and planning.
Yeah.
So
he sort of reins it in, whereas like you've got this sort of free-form creativity. He sort of like he focuses it to a sort of fixed narrative point, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he also comes up with most of the world building because I have like ideas for setting in mind, but I refuse to give places names. I refuse to like figure out like where the characters live on Earth, you know, this kind of stuff. And Ayo kind of made me do it.
Why did you refuse to do that?
I don't know, I just didn't care. I just cared about, like, you know, interactions between characters and stuff. Everything else was too much work.
To be fair, if you've seen some of the setting building stuff I've done, you can't really blame her for staying out of that, you know. government policies and forms and public holidays, taxation. Yeah. And,
it's a really bleak world. You've created, like, the whole thing is kind of like, you've got the cyberpunk angle absolutely bang on with it. It's really nice.
Because there's a lot of back matter, isn't there? Like, you know, when you, I've noticed that when you have your issues and you go on that sort of, some would say a hiatus in between issues, you don't let that space just linger there. You fill it with, like, back matter, don't you? And, like pages about the world and some more prosy stuff or articles and stuff. And that's
fascinating.
Yeah, that's
usually when Ayo takes over.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that with any kind of comic or novel or film is, you know, you're always developing more ideas, more backstory, more setting than you can conceivably cram into a comic. And I think it's kind of a danger you run into that you get so fascinated with the stuff that you insist on leveraging it into the comic by hook or crook, and then you just get these massive info dumps and you get these massive expository bricks of text smacking you about the head. And relatively early on, I was just like, no, let's not do that. Let's just kind of have things go organically. And then the really kind of propeller heady stuff we can do between the chapters, we can find other ways to convey that information. So the stuff that, you know, we've got the Zine, the Mind Tripper Zine, Fear and Loading, we use that as kind of a way to shine a window on what the scene is like, because we haven't really had too much of a perspective on those guys.
Maybe, and then there's... maybe now's a good time. Like, we're getting into the weeds of it a bit, aren't we, here, without, but we haven't really declared to the listener what it's about. Yeah. Did you want to, guys, before we get into the sort of, you know, the use of screens and all that sort of thing as well, did you want to give us a summary of the issues so far, guys? One of you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you want to go ahead and take it, or should I do my thought bubble pitch again?
Do the thing.
Do the thing.
Yeah. Are you the talker at the table? Is that how it works? Yeah.
Yeah. We have kind of a division of labor thing going on.
Yeah. Good.
So our tagline is "Everything Went Wrong." Weekly misadventures in the bleak cyberpunk future of 1995, which kind of says it all, really. It's, as I say in the Kickstarter, it's a little bit slice of life, a lot of cyberpunk pastiche, and a whole hell of a lot of magenta. Like, it's obviously leaning very heavily into those tropes, but there's also a lot of 90s nostalgia that goes on. The basic premise is you've got this guy, Dan, and he's living in this post-Soviet republic called Stradania, and he used to be a virtual reality operator, a mind tripper. He was, you know, creating these elaborate virtual visions, usually pretty heavily drug-fueled, and then one day a job, in your typical cyberpunk stories, you always have the one job that goes bad. In this case, left him with a worm called Skullfuck, which effectively will melt his entire head if he tries to re-enter virtual reality again. So he's got this kind of forced sobriety going on. He can't, he cannot do virtual reality anymore. So his main source of income dried up. So in order to make ends meet, he's got this god-awful delivery job, working at basically sketchy FedEx or Yodel, for those of you in the UK, making incredibly dangerous deliveries to terrible human beings for minimum wage, getting, you know, continuously chewed out by his boss, abused by the other employees, and then he goes home to his crappy apartment with a shared bathroom and, you know, 300 other neighbors, all of whom despise him.
It's a real feel-good piece, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's, you know, he's just kind of drifting from one existential crisis to another until one day he discovers, while waiting in line to buy his coffee, discovers a mind tripper Zine, and there's an obituary in there for him. And somewhat disturbed and intrigued, he decides to go and check out what the hell happened, and things just kind of spiral out of control from there.
So begins the classic sort of cyberpunk mystery sort of adventure sort of thing that rolls on from there.
So why the 90s setting? Because it's when I was reading about it, I thought, oh, set in the 90s. So it's you sort of reversed it a bit, of you want to include some nostalgia, but obviously it's got that cyberpunk feel as well. Is that the idea? Or
I think cyberpunk is like inherently kind of very like nostalgic and kind of,
yeah,
because it was big in the 90s and 80s.
Yeah.
So naturally, it kind of, for me, it is like very retro futuristic.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, if you think about it, the sort of visual tropes that we associate with cyberpunk, whether it's in comics or games or movies, you know, the neon, the rain, the trench coats, a lot of that is very much rooted in that late 80s, early 90s time period.
Yeah.
So what you consider classic cyberpunk, is it's very much, you know, just like diesel punk or steampunk are fixed to a certain time period, I feel like cyberpunk is sort of innately that late 80s, early 90s aesthetic. And there's been attempts to kind of move it forward. The biggest problem we really have with the genre is it's really the now at this point. You know, we have smart prosthetics, we have our malware, we have our information superhighway, we have our digital currencies, we have our robots, we have our mega corporations, except they're named Amazon instead of, you know, Renraku or what have you. And it's no longer futuristic. And that kind of forecast and kind of prognostication aspect of it has been lost along the way. And I think the genre has kind of been struggling to find identity for itself ever since the 90s came and went.
Okay. Because yeah, I know it's one of the things... Sorry, Meg, go on.
No, I was just saying, you'll go on Reddit Cyberpunk and it's just people posting like cityscapes and being like, is this cyberpunk? And that's pretty much what it's about now.
Without necessarily just Akira. That is one of the go-to sort of images, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
that's just...
I was going to say, because it's a series of... Runner. I think cyberpunk scene is a series of cliches, isn't it, to a certain extent these days? You know, but you carefully avoid a lot of that, don't you? And that seemingly is quite purposeful, isn't it?
I'd like to think that our comic is like cyberpunk for people who hate cyberpunk, because, you know, we kind of make fun of a lot of the tropes.
Yeah.
And try to subvert some others. And there were a lot of things that like bugged me, like when I read Neuromancer, and that's kind of, I wanted to avoid certain things.
Mm.
Like, I wanted to make sure that our character is like genuinely miserable and not like some super cool hacker who gets the girl and, you know.
Yeah,
that's pretty much, because in Neuromancer, that is the case. He's kind of just hung up on the fact that a kind of a failed relationship, but generally he's kind of like a bit of a dude.
Yeah, he's not doing too bad.
Yeah, everything like, works out okay. Yeah.
And like, yeah. I'm not going to spoil Neuromancer for people.
Pretty sure the statute of limitations has expired on that one.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm in the same boat. I'm not really interested in telling a straight cyberpunk story with the usual tropes. Like, okay, we've got some of those elements there, but I'm, you know, more interested in how can we differentiate ourselves in that kind of awful post-Soviet setting with the kind of mundanity, the bureaucracy, the babushkas, the crappy cars and so forth. You know, there's nothing sleek or enviable about Dan's environment. You know, it's just crappy, but not the cool kind of crappy. It's just unglamorous. And we really, I think, lean heavily into that kind of demystifying aspect of it. Now, there are some kind of cool bits to it, but it's primarily in the US-based parts.
Yeah.
So it creates kind of a nice contrast, but at the same time, it's not necessarily the most interesting from a narrative standpoint. I just kind of love the possibilities that the setting gives us and any excuse that we can use to kind of dig into those and pull ourselves further away from the standard cyberpunk storytelling.
Do you think world building, just overall, whether it be from concept to, you know, backstory, back matter, etc., is quite important for a webcomic? Because, you know, there's so much, you've got to build up a fan base. Now, I think fans or comic readers love it when they see that there's this bigger world to be explored. You know, that was that always a goal? Like, let's, you've got the main story, but let's create a huge world here.
Well, I mean, I'd have to say, I think this is something that's interesting because when we were originally doing the development of Drugs and Wires as a world, I was spending a lot of time going back into what Mary had drawn in the years prior.
Too much.
Yeah, you're continuously horrified because I dig up something from like 2012 and like, no, I'll stop, please.
Why would you do this?
Because there was a lot of good stuff in there, you know? You drew a lot of really evocative, interesting stuff that hinted at a story. You know, there was all these bits and pieces. And I felt like my job was really just to kind of figure out how it all fit together and kind of find the common threads in that. And beyond building that up, you know, we've added on a lot since then. But a lot of that is just kind of, I'm the kind of person who likes to think about things. I'm the kind of person who, you know, will take a piece of information, process it. So, you know, I look at stuff like, you know, you've got these video screens that are saying, you know, attention, you are wasting precious oxygen. And then you think about what kind of government would put something like that out there? You know, what kind of government sends people notices saying, oh yeah, congratulations, happy Valentine's Day, you've been selected for mandatory organ donation.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about, you know, the political situation, how elections are run, what kind of people would be in positions of power, you know, how they stay in power. And the wheels just keep turning and turning and turning. And it's not necessarily something we really even need to tell the story, but it's something that's almost reflexive for me to just kind of keep on adding the detail. The trick is really just kind of boiling it down to the stuff that's actually interesting and making sure that only that stuff gets into the comic and everything else.
You know? I wanted to go back to the Russian setting, guys. Is that something that came... I know you're not Russian, Mary. You're Latvian.
Well, I am actually
Russian.
I'm ethnically Russian, yeah.
Oh, I see. Is that something that came from you, the Russian setting then? Because I know you're a Russian speaker, aren't you, as well?
A little bit. Thing is, I was actually, like, opposed to, like, making it super Russian. Originally, I wanted it to be super vague because I wanted all the setting to be super vague. But then the more we got into it, the more we kind of started adopting the setting. And eventually, we kind of just embraced it that, yeah, you know, I speak Russian. I have a lot of, like, you know, frames of reference. I know a lot about the 90s, like, because my parents lived through it. So this is all valuable stuff that I could bring into the world building.
Yeah. I think giving it a Russian setting gives it a slightly different sense as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, when
you normally think of cyberpunk, you think of Japan or America, don't you, I suppose?
Yeah.
But the sort of having lived through the wall coming down and stuff and the sort of discovery of the different kinds of technology that came out of Russia at the time, you know, there's a lot more sort of valves and stuff like that. It was, you know, the sort of... The technology seemed very different when it was it's done over there. Is that something you'd agree with, or?
I don't know about technology.
Right.
Because we did have computers, just that
it wasn't
as available, and naturally we had a lot more like piracy and stuff because no one's gonna buy software. To an Eastern European, buying software is just crazy. You know, that's one of the things we use in the comics as well.
Okay.
Interesting part is actually I grew up in Southeast Asia in the 90s, and we also had rampant piracy and everything else, and a lot of, you know, there was a lot of government corruption, a lot of deprivation, and, you know, Mary feeds a lot of her own experiences from her childhood growing up in that, and for me it's, I have put bits of my upbringing in Southeast Asia, parts of my time in the U.S. and so forth. So being a teenager in the 90s, you know, portions of it are also very autobiographical.
Mm.
It's almost like a bootleg society to a certain extent, do you think? Or...
Yeah.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
Okay.
Well, that's probably going to be used in the future, Tony.
Yeah. Going to have to hold on to that one.
Copyright me. Sorry. Okay. So you started together and then you started working on the webcomic, but it's something you now print, isn't it? It comes out as a printed version, guys. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we started off just by printing issues, and now we are about to print a volume, hopefully. Well, the Kickstarter is
it's looking good.
Yeah.
So I guess it's going to happen.
There was a slight sense of nervousness in your voice then, like you were scared.
Oh, I'm terrified. I have never sent out, like, this much stuff before. I mean, I fulfilled, like, some pre-orders, but it would be, like, sometimes I'd get 20 packages, and it would be terrifying, and now I'm going to have hundreds, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that all down to you? Is that the way it's being handled? Or are you running the Kickstarter from sort of Nottingham Central? Is that how it's working, or...?
Yeah, that's what I'm planning to do. We're planning to do some fulfillment. Like, for example, all the US backers should be able to get their books fulfilled. The ones who just got the book, they might be able to get it shipped from US because we're printing with a company that's US-based and they do some fulfillment. So I thought I would ship some of it to them.
Yeah. I made the mistake of putting together an auto-updating spreadsheet showing just how many floppies, how many printed comics, how many enamel pins, and so forth we'd have to cough up at the current pledge levels. And I think those are pretty sobering numbers. You know, obviously when you launch a Kickstarter, you hope for success. You know, nobody launches a Kickstarter expecting to fail. Yeah. But I think it's safe to say we were both blown away by just the incredible outpouring of support from readers, people in the comics ecosystem in general, friends, colleagues, the fact that we were funded in 24 hours, less than 24
hours. Yeah, you still got a few weeks to go yet as well, haven't you?
Yeah. Absolutely boggling. It's just like, okay, well, crap, what do we do now? You know, I've got a whole month left to fill with something.
There are things we planned on doing, but like I was hoping we would have more time to discuss it. And now it's like, people are like, so what's the next stretch goal? And I'm just like, let me just put some numbers in.
Yeah, exactly.
So what made you decide, right, let's go to Kickstarter and let's collect the first four chapters? Because it's the first four, isn't it? I mean, this is an ongoing story, I'm guessing.
It is.
Yes. So the book is the first four chapters, which are all done complete online as we speak. What made you think, right, let's get a printed... I mean, everyone always wants the printed collection, don't they? But what was the extra incentive to sort of say, right, let's do one of the first four with some extra bits, etc.?
Because chapter four is like kind of the turning point, so it's like it's a nice arc. It ends in a good place, I think, for people to get into the comic.
Mm. So by that point, people know where they are with the world. You know, there's a nice sort of cliffhangery sort of moment that they want to read the next one, I guess. So, you know, you almost are giving them a drug, aren't you, with the first book?
So... I would hope so.
No one should use that in court. She's just,
it's not an actual drug.
No, it's not an actual drug. Yeah. It's just a book.
Cover.
Well, that could be a good stretch goal. You know what I mean? Half a kilo.
Well, I think it's
heroin.
Also.
Yeah.
I think it's also just the difficulty because, Mary, you've done individual issues beforehand. You know, we printed issue one, then issue two, then issue three. And the problem is they don't all sell at the same pace. So, you know, you've reprinted issue one a couple of times and you've got like boxes of issue two and three still kicking around. And, you know, at that point, the question was, do you print up issue four as a single issue? And then you've got, you know, potentially more of that around, or do you just say, okay, well, we're going to draw a clean line under it now and do a collected edition? Because you also get folks who have been avoiding the single issues because they want to get it in kind of a nice shelf-ready format.
Of course,
I've been sold it at conventions before. People were like, well, this is nice, but I'm going to wait for the nice big book. And I was like, okay.
So, I mean, I know you're a very well-read online webcomic. How... did much of a conversation was there beforehand of saying, how are we going to translate the eyes on it on the screen to people who are invested enough to pledge at the Kickstarter? Because I'm not asking you to go into specific numbers, are you finding percentages or are you finding spikes in different areas of the world or anything like that? Are you looking at the analytics enough beforehand? Or
I should have probably attached some Google Analytics to our Kickstarter, but I have not done that. So the stats I can see are fairly limited. I see some referral traffic, but I don't really know the locations. I would have to like go through like Excel sheets, and that's Aya's job.
I got to justify my salary somehow. Yeah, I mean, going into the Kickstarter, I theoretically get paid, right?
Yeah.
We did just make thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
I didn't get the memo for that.
Yeah, this is where the partnership breaks down. This is the last moment that Drugs and Wives will be.
I tend to take a bit more of a relaxed attitude toward it. So, I mean, as I was commenting on Twitter the other day, I mean, Mary really does the lion's share of the work with every single page and also really does a lot of the work in terms of the promotion, networking, getting our name out there. Payment isn't really a big thing.
I sent you money.
I'm just saying, I'm perfectly okay if you decided to keep the money for yourself too, you know?
Oh, really?
That's a verbally binding agreement there, Mary. Let's get on that one.
Well, I'm glad we sorted this out.
Let's go back to what we're talking about, statistics and figures and eyes on the website and stuff like that. Is that something you went through, Io? Did you have a look to think, well, we're getting so many thousand views a day, or whatever it's going to be, how's that going to translate? We sold so many physical copies. You know, what were your thoughts around that?
Well, my thinking really was just kind of comparing, not on the basis of the figures from Google Analytics or what have you, but just kind of looking at other comics Kickstarters around our popularity level, around our size grade. I was kind of seeing, okay, what kind of backing do those guys have? And then in terms of distribution, what does it break down to? You know, what kind of rewards are the most popular? How much are people willing to spend? So, for example, one thing you discover is with a lot of these Kickstarters in our size class, 85 to 90% of the backers go for a tier that's, you know, $35 or under. So if you look at the way our Kickstarter is was set up, you know, we have a lot of stuff around that price level so that people have a couple different options for that specific price range. If they're interested in one particular piece of merchandise rather than another. So that's the kind of analysis I was doing. And then on the basis of that, I figured, okay, well, you know, we'll get, you know, maybe 250, 300 backers if all goes well. And then we can just kind of price and budget with those numbers in mind. And, you know, obviously we were not expecting people to be quite as generous with their money as they were. We blew through our highest tier in, what was it, about 2 hours?
Something like that.
Yeah, just an absurd amount of time. But, you know, the first couple of days, the folks you get are always your biggest fans, the ones who follow you most closely. And those are the folks you're going to be more interested in, those extra tchotchkes, the enamel pins and so forth. For the real hardcore fans, I decided to be completely self-indulgent and write an entire fake travel guide to the setting. Just absolutely more detailed than any sane person would want to know about the comic and the setting. And this kind of have it as sort of a bonus for all the ultra fans who really want to dig down into that kind of stuff and put it out there. But, you know, you're going to start off by getting the super fans, and then over time you're going to get people who've never encountered the comic before, and they're going to have a slightly more relaxed buy, and they're going to, okay, well, maybe I'll plonk down the cash for the single issue, and I'll just kind of read it and see where it goes. And then maybe once you've converted those guys, the next Kickstarter, they'll go for the extras with the merchandise. They'll go for the higher tiers.
Okay, so interaction with the readers is important for you guys. Am I right in thinking that?
Oh, yeah, extremely. We have, like, a Discord server. I think it's over 200 people now. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few regulars, and, you know, there's always a lot of activity going on. We have a special Patreon channel where I post all the, like, work-in-progress stuff.
I was going to ask about that, because that seems to be going gangbusters, your Patreon, as well. Is that something you see some come and go, but yours seems to be a regularly funded and, a nice level, I would say. Is that something that takes up a lot of your time, Mary, is it, with that? Because is it a lot of sketches?
It should probably take up more of my time than it does in the moment.
Right.
But, yeah, for a while I've been doing an extra comic just for patrons.
Okay.
But a lot of the stuff I post is stuff I'm working on, so there will be a lot of works in progress.
Mm.
Just like if I'm working on something, if I'm designing something for the Kickstarter, I'll be throwing in like works in progress into the Patreon channel. Because for me, it's easy, and like for fans, it's quite interesting to see like how you work, and they can also contribute and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. Are you finding people translating over from the Patreon to the Kickstarter, or do people who are doing the Patreon kind of think they'll probably get it anyway in some form or other, do you think? Or
what's the translation numbers?
Yeah.
Quite a few people who are our patrons are also pledging to the Kickstarter, at least the fans. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers. I can't tell you the exact number. But on the Patreon Discord, there was quite a few people like asking about the Kickstarter and trying to pledge to like the highest rewards and stuff like that.
Because they're kind of the super fans, and that's... Okay, interesting.
Well, the nice thing... I mean, we're not insanely popular. We have a decent following.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about being at that level is you still have the opportunity to make those kind of one-on-one connections with your fans. I mean, you know, we're both in the Discord. We're actively chatting about people. You know, they tell us about their day, you know, what's going on at their job, what's going on at school. They show some of their artwork. They talk about games and so forth. So for that kind of the core fan base... You know, these are people I feel I know personally. These are people who are,
I think we
you know, I've gamed with some of these people. You know, I've done tabletop RPGs with them. You know, and there's a lot of conversation. There's just a lot of... it's a sense of community, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just we produce the comic, they read the comic, that's it. You know, it's an ongoing conversation. Not just obviously on the Discord channels, but also in the comments sections. You know, this, you see names pop up over and over again. And over time, you kind of get a read on those people and kind of figure out what they're about, what interests them. And we also like to keep an eye on the speculation, you know, what people are thinking, what people predict will happen. Sometimes they're disturbingly on the money. Like, we have some very smart, very attentive people. And that's kind of the problem as a storyteller. You're like, okay, well, you know, I've got this great plot twist. Oh, and I'm going to foreshadow it. I'm going to drop all these hints. And then somebody puts all the hints together. You're like, wait, no, no, no. You're not supposed to do that yet. You're supposed to wait until the reveal, and then you're supposed to be amazed. And then you're supposed to go back and read and see, oh, so that's what was going on the whole time. But at the same time, it means that obviously the hints you're dropping are being picked up on.
It's all working. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
And sometimes you just kind of want to confound those people. It's like, oh, this is what you think will happen. Okay, well, I'm just going to make some slight tweaks to the script now.
Yeah, yeah.
Smart guy.
It's troublesome because when people kind of like come up with those, I mean, a lot of webcomics say like, don't talk about possible future stuff that might happen in the story because they don't want to spoil it for others. I'm not sure if you can ever really say that and expect people not to do it. But if you're doing your job as a storyteller, those kind of signposts to where the story's going should be kind of laid out, so if someone's clued up, like you said, they should be able to see it coming down the line. But it's kind of, I've had that happen to myself when someone said, oh, I wonder if this is gonna happen. You're like, shit. do you change it, or do you kind of think, no, I'm just gonna stay the course, this is what I've set up? And yeah, it's a tricky one.
Have you ever thought about changing it because someone's got it on the money?
Well, it's tempting, but I mean, some of these things are things we've committed to, and just making big changes right now just kind of derails the whole narrative. At the same time, you know, I feel like even though if some of the individual plot beats might be predictable, the trick is you just kind of mix it up and throw in, you always throw in something new, something unexpected, find a new angle to work something so that even though you might occasionally see, oh, okay, that plot point is going where I thought it went or thought it was going to go, there's other stuff there. It's like, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what's going to happen now. You know, dazzle them just by constantly throwing stuff to distract them from the stuff they've already figured out, so to speak.
Kind of, so script-wise, do you write a whole issue, then give it to Mary? Or do you kind of drip feed it, say like a couple of pages at a time, or how does it work?
Well, it's a bit of an amorphous process.
How does it work?
How does it work? She says, years into our partnership, you know, we're still figuring that out. No, we have a slightly more flexible style, so we've got a Google document that we use, and when one of us gets an idea for a scene or something we're really interested in, we'll write it up and then kind of figure out how to string it together later. So right now there's a lot of scenes that are kind of floating around, and then as we get closer to actually reaching the point in the story where they'd be relevant, it's like, okay, it's time to line these up, it's time to figure out how we get from A to B to C. But that also means that you have scenes that kind of drift from one chapter to the next. Like, oh, well, we don't have enough space for that thing. Let's move to chapter 3 or chapter 5. In some cases, things keep getting bumped and bumped and bumped, and then they have to be rewritten. But it's not 100% super detailed, super rigid. So if one of us gets a great idea relatively late in the game, you've had some pretty good ones, too.
That's true. Sometimes if I don't like something, I'll just go in and like make a new page for like no reason, and then I'll be like, okay, we have this page now and we need dialogue for it. Happened a couple of times.
This chapter, you've actually, I think, this is since chapter 1, this is probably the one chapter you've written the most material for, and I'm actually all for it because chapter 4, I mean chapter 5.
Well, I'm trying to remember what happened this chapter. I'm sorry. maybe. Sometimes I forget like which bits I wrote and which bits I wrote.
That's good though, isn't it? Kind of like I said, if it's kind of like you're both of you contributing and the stories benefit
it's
out
seamless,
two inputs.
Isn't it?
That's great.
Yeah, well, I think so.
Well, I think it's important to note that this isn't a one-man show. You know. the first chapter of the story was Mary writing and me just adding little bits here and there and punching stuff up. Chapter 2, 3, you know, I did a good chunk of it. She contributed ideas. She wrote the odd bit. Chapter 4, she had a lot of hands in. But at the same time, also when I'm writing, at least when I first started writing, I was really kind of trying to actively mimic or recreate the feel of her comics. So it's kind of trying to train myself to write a little bit in her voice and really kind of nail the feel of it. Because Mary, you had a pretty significant level of popularity on Tumblr and Co. and DeviantArt well before I came along. And I always felt like, okay, well, you know, I've got this pre-existing fan base that I'm kind of slotting into. I don't want to disappoint those guys. You know, they've had an opportunity to get to know Dan and his world. And, you know, that's something I want to do justice to. You know, I don't just want to stomp all over it and alienate the folks who've been following Mary for years.
Okay, interesting.
It's funny you say you were trying to write in my voice, because now when I write stuff, I kind of write it like how you write it, or at least I try to the best of my ability.
It's obviously a perfect partnership if you're trying to copy each other's work.
I guess so.
Yeah, and yet you've only met once, is that right? You've actually physically only met once.
Yeah, I keep telling Ayo to come over for conventions, but it just doesn't happen.
And I'm pretty sure I've invited you to come over here on a couple of occasions.
What are Comic Cons like? You're in Germany, aren't you, Ayo? Is that right?
Yeah, that's
so
correct.
What are comic conventions like over there? Are they good, or?
I've got to be honest. I haven't really had that much opportunity to check them out. I've actually lived in Germany since 2015, and I have a toddler, so my ability to kind of go off and check things out is a little bit limited. But there's a reasonably healthy scene, and certainly in terms of the options we'd have as exhibitors, or, you know, for example, this year I'm looking into Munich as an option in September. The problem is also, just as a writer, you don't really have as much to offer. Like, Mary, you know, you'll go there and you can do the sketches, and everybody's really super excited to meet you because they love your artwork. And just like, you know, as a writer, you're kind of like, okay, well, I can sign some stuff. And I can tell people how much I appreciate the fact that they read the comic, and I can deliver a pitch. But
to be fair, most of the time, that's exactly what I do at conventions. Like, I don't draw that much. Usually, I just kind of stand there and just wait for people to give me money.
I'm just saying, you're a bigger draw,
oh my god!
I mean, people love your artwork. People genuinely love your artwork, and. You know, you've got the prints and the stickers and all the other merch that's piled up over the years.
But if you were to do have a table, just say like at Munich or somewhere like that, you know, you would have like, I guess, the Drugs and Wires collected edition, I guess, and some prints and stuff that you've done from this campaign. I'm guessing that's what you'd have.
Yeah, I guess so. I think I would be worried about the language aspect, because I don't know how the comic scene works in Germany and if they're okay with like. Stuff in English.
It goes both ways. I mean, you do get a lot of people, surprisingly good level of English literacy in Germany. The problem you do run into, though, for instance, all of my single issue comics I have to mail order from Scotland, because here you only really get a limited set of series. You know, it's typically the DC stuff, the Marvel stuff, some of the licensed series like Star Wars that are put out by local publishers in German. And then you have a tremendous amount of stuff that's coming in from other countries, especially the Franco-Belgian stuff. I mean, you have this absolute amazing wealth of stuff that's being translated into German that in the US, for example, you would not be able to get. Like, you have a much more limited variety. But the bias, I feel, is kind of away from single issues, because there isn't as much of a variety there, and more towards those kind of collected editions, those nice kind of proper formatted hardbound copies.
So is the collected edition the way you're going to move forward with Drugs and Wires? Like, no more single issues, and then it'll just be collections of This is obviously the first time you've done the collection, yeah. So you've got to do this one first.
I would prefer not to do any issues anymore, again, just because they're so hard to shift and transport and everything. But that does leave me without like any new books for like years and years.
Yeah.
So I think what I would do is continue to make side comics like we did with the Blue Pill Arcade, and you know, have those little things in the meantime until the next collected edition comes out.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult. Obviously, if you have an excess of, say, issue 3, and then you don't have much 1 or 2.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
My living room was just destroyed by issue 2s because, like, I printed way too many of them.
And, of course, now all the merch is going to come in. So if you think a living room is bad now,
it's going to be full of enamel pins soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
My new roommate's not going to like me.
Yeah.
That's something I wanted to get onto a bit, guys, if you don't mind, is the tiers that you've decided on. Was it a joint enterprise to decide who the what the separate tiers on the Kickstarter would be?
I think I started by doing an estimate and like doing the numbers the best I could, and then I gave it to Ayu to make it all actually work.
Okay. Because I know we just mentioned it jokingly there, but enamel pins, they're the hotness at the moment, aren't they? I think everyone's got to have an enamel pin tier, haven't they, almost, do you think?
Yeah, I was afraid that they would go out of fashion by the time we finally launched a Kickstarter, but it seems to be okay.
Yeah. And then you've also got, so far from what I was saying, you've got 5 takers for the background character tier. That's an interesting one. So how are you going to work on that? Have you decided? I mean, are they going to appear in the next issue, or are they going to appear in the trade, or what's the plan?
They're probably going to appear like whenever we have good space for it, like in the comic.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Naturally, it's not going to be an existing collected edition, but probably the next one. And I think we'll work closely with the readers and, you know, talk about who they want to be. I mean, it's not going to be a speaking role. It's going to be maybe a background character or something. But we'll still put some effort into it.
So they'll send you a picture and you'll say, what sort of thing would you mind being? Would you mind being, a cyber hobo or something, would you?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's kind of cool, isn't it? Was that your idea? Was it Mary? Or...
I think it was like a joint thing.
Yeah.
Something we've been kicking around for a while.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've done a lot of kind of character cameos over the years of other people's webcomic characters. There's some real-life celebrities in there, too. Like, anytime there's a big crowd scene, Mary, you always kind of go really to the wall and really cram in just mountains of references.
Well, I wouldn't say mountains, but I'll try to have like someone in there, or make sure there's something for people to recognize. You know,
it also makes it easier for you, doesn't it? Really, because if you're just drawing a generic crowd, that can be as monotonous as just drawing grass.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're drawing people that you know, or you know, popular celebrities or whatever, I guess that makes it more fun for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it just makes me more invested.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing about having those cameos is it's, you know, the really nice thing about working in indie comics and web comics is you are really part of a community, and we all talk to each other, and we all toss around ideas, we all read each other's work. So, you know, it's sometimes nice to have those little touches, just kind of nods to friends and colleagues.
Yeah.
And the other one I wanted to ask about, guys, is the first tier is £5 for a PDF. I'm going to be honest with you, I thought that was a little high. How did you come up with that one? Was that a conscious decision of yours to put it that high, give it some more value, or?
Actually, I read a tutorial by Iron Spike about kickstarting a comic the other week, and according to her, it was supposed to be even higher. It can be like priced as like half the book, because, you know, why not? I guess.
Yeah.
But also, the PDF will have extra bits, because there will be extras in the books that, you know.
Yeah, so beyond what's on the webcomic, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, so you're getting your value for money when you get your digital.
Yeah, but mostly I would say £5 tier is like a donation pledge, because we had some people donate us a few pounds, like even for no reward. So if someone wants like a PDF on top of that, then, you know, why not? And also I did have people ask me like for a PDF of the webcomic, because it would make it easier for them to read. Like maybe they don't want to go through the website. So
we've done that with review copies, haven't we? Yeah, we've had webcomic people on, and they've actually sent us a PDF. Just it's kind of when it's a long running webcomic, it's kind of almost easier to read, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yours has been going for quite a few years. But I think one of my favourite bits of merch, I know T-shirts are quite popular at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, you got a T-shirt.
But the Wirehead T-shirt that you guys got looks awesome. And it's I see it's screen printed with fluorescent ink. Oh, sign me up.
Oh, God.
The moment I saw the neon option, because like I was sourcing quotes from various screen printing places, yeah. And one of them was like, oh, we do neon screen print. And later it turned out that pretty much every screen printing place does neon stuff. But as soon as I saw it, I was like, I know exactly what we need. We need that.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely fitting of the genre and the book that you're doing, isn't it? Yeah, spot on. Yeah, I love that.
Well, Mary, you made kind of the conscious decision to take a little bit more of a hit on those shirts just to get that additional quality, that additional bit of verisimilitude for the shirt. Because, I mean, we could have produced it relatively cheaply and just gone for one or two colors, but you really just kind of wanted to make that very much a high-end piece of merch.
Well, I wanted it to look glitchy and cool, and I wanted it to kind of look like, you know, all the rest of our stuff, because I always have a lot of colors and glitching, all that chromatic aberration going.
Yeah.
So,
I kind of, the comic is kind of, it sticks to the, not one art style, but there's so many variations, and like the animated GIFs you work into pages are absolutely fantastic. I really think that's such a nice touch. And you seem to sort of constantly change and all the style you're working in all the time. So, kind of, art background, where do you kind of come from on that?
Well, I have a very like diverse art background. I started off doing illustration, but then I did game art for a few years. I was a 3D artist at some point. In my life, I've done pixel art as well. I've done vector stuff. So I try to bring like all of that knowledge into the comic because it keeps me from getting bored. I hate doing the same thing over and over and over. So that's why I kind of like to experiment and just play around.
I think it really, really plays into the comic well and the whole story. It it's great. I really enjoy it. It's good that you can kind of get one experience from the web comic by reading it online and get the animated stuff.
Yeah.
And you get different stuff from the print. I feel like kind of that's the way to go, having the different things on offer from the different platforms. So rather than say, well, what's the point of reading it online or I've already got it online, I don't need the print. There's different things being offered. Both. I think that's a definite strength.
Yeah, it definitely helps because so many people don't actually like reading comics on screen. In fact, I'm one of those people. I prefer to buy a webcomic and just read it when I'm not on the computer, you know.
Yeah, same.
And I have a lot of people at conventions who know this comic is online, but for years and years they just come back and buy the issue and like they prefer to read in paper.
I like the completeness of knowing you've got it as that solid thing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of webcomics come and go, don't you? And sometimes they even get taken down. You don't see them anymore. Yeah. But to have that sort of solid bit of story on your shelf at home is sometimes sort of more comforting, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Funny enough, my wife actually refuses to read the comic online. Like, she always waits for the printed issues, and then she reads the printed issues, but she will not read the online version. And she keeps hectoring me, when's chapter 4 coming? When's chapter 4 coming? When's chapter 4 coming?
I'd say it's weird because a lot of other media has gone the way of like digital. Like there's so many people I know that would kind of like say, well, I'd never read a book digitally, and then you turn around and they've got a Kindle in their hands. But comics seems to be quite steadfastly sort of digging its heels in, and not so many people wanting to make that jump to digital with comics.
Yeah, digital's still very much in the minority, isn't it? Still?
Yeah, it's a very different experience.
Yeah, people want that physical copy, don't they? You know, I know. I've pledged to many a Kickstarter of digital comics, just so I could have a physical copy of it on my shelf.
Yeah,
you know, it's shelf porn. That's what we call it.
No, I reversely download comics that I've already got a physical comic of, just so I can have them on my iPad and read them on, you know, on holiday or on the train or when I fancy it as well. You know, there's the reverse is true as well. We wondered about this when we first started the show. We thought, people ain't going to be buying hard copies of web comics, but it's so common now. You know, it's a real thing, isn't it? And what you've done is you've got people invested in the story, you've got people following you and the fans, and you've rightly put a lot of extra material in it as well. You know, you've done the right thing to give that added value to it, you think? You know?
Yeah.
What sort of thing have you put in there, guys? What sort of extra product have you put into the... Or are you going to put into the trade?
So, it's just a thought, but we were thinking of doing an intro bit and just draw, like, the... the first few pages for the webcomic, just explaining the backstory a little better.
Okay.
Because when we got the first review of our comic, it was after the first issue came out. I think Broken Frontier reviewed it. And right. He was like, well, the only issue is like, it seems like the story starts in the middle. And I completely agree. Like, it starts like after everything bad already happened. So
Yeah,
I figured
that's okay.
Just getting the first few pages in there would be kind of nice. But it just comes down to whether I'm going to have enough time to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a valid storytelling technique. And I've heard David Mamet talk about it, that dropping people into the action is sometimes the most interesting thing. We don't want to see the origin story. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that can be added later, can't it? Yeah, definitely. What other things? Have you got concept sketches? And is it that sort of back matter? Or
yeah, they're probably going to be concept sketches and just bits and bobs. I don't want to spoil too much.
No, fair
right.
enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
The good thing with the PDF as well, obviously, there's no real limitation on that kind of, because if you want to put in IO's writings and stuff, it's only sort of extra file size, which is kind of almost irrelevant in some respects. You can absolutely jam that up, which is a nice little other thing to add. Generally, kind of like Drugs and Wires, it reminds me of the webcomic The Demon Archives, where you've got a writer so invested and the artist very much invested, and they complement each other so well and come up with a great product, because the writer can step in and like you do, IO, and write stuff for when the comic's on a hiatus from the art, and vice versa. You're both feeding into it, so I've got to take my cap off to it, because you're doing a great job.
Blimey, that's high praise from Dan Butcher.
Yeah. I'll take it. Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you something I haven't seen much of, but I've enjoyed when I've seen it. And I think the last one I saw was from Ken Reynolds, is a audio commentary that goes out as a Dropbox link with the raw tears. And I really like that. She's sort of hearing, like, it's almost like a to and fro between the creators talking about what happened and why they did this.
I wonder about how those work, though. I mean, I haven't really listened to one yet. Is it literally like a creator reading the book and then talking about the creation of it?
No, it's just great. It's just sort of turning through it and saying, oh, this is how I started. It's almost like an article, a verbal article, you know?
Okay.
Like, this is how I started. This is what I was thinking about when I did this. And, you know, I'd definitely like a director's commentary almost, you know? I'd definitely listen to that. Yeah.
We do actually do that on Patreon. You know,
right, okay.
We have this tier, and it's basically we were trying to figure out how to provide a little bit more value to the folks who are really kind of the hardcore supporters of the comics. So I hit on the idea that I would take our original script pages as they existed on Google Docs, and I'd post those up, first of all, so you could kind of get a sense of how things were originally structured, you know, how certain things were described, and then talk, okay, well, you know, what was the thought process here? You know, what was the genesis of this scene? In some cases, stuff had been shuffled around. In some cases, there were rewrites. Talk about alternate takes, because I also end up deleting a lot of dialogue to make things fit a page, or stuff gets rewritten to the point where, you know, between drafts one and two, you're basically looking at two completely different narratives. Mm. And over time, it's kind of going chunk by chunk and take people through those first four chapters from a creator's perspective. And it's an interesting process. It doesn't really get a lot of comments. Don't know whether it's really because the number of people who read it are so small or because it's a little overwhelming, but it's helpful for me at least, because it also forces me to think about my end of the process and how things get put together. And sometimes in reflecting on how certain pages get created, you get these little aha moments that you can then take and apply to future portions of the script, or sometimes it'll help you work through a problem or, you know, a naughty plot issue that's been bothering you for a while.
Yeah, I really like reading Aya's commentary, because there's always stuff I learned for myself. Like, half the references I won't even know about them until like a year later when I read the commentary, and it's like, oh, so that's what it was about.
I'm really obnoxious like that. Like, there is so much stuff in the script that just like these very coded, very elusive kind of references to bad 90s cyberpunk, like, you know, Virtuosity or Lawnmower Man.
Yes.
And you know, it's numbers, it's character names, it's pretty much everything. And I write this stuff and I think, oh, I'm very clever, and then nobody picks up on it. And then you're kind of stuck because you don't want to draw attention to it because that's just incredibly self-indulgent. But at the same time, it's just like, come on, I have all these great,
yeah, look at what
great
I did.
Hidden references.
I love it. I love all
Somebody
of it.
Somebody has to love it. So, yeah, the commentary is the one place where we can kind of legitimately talk about, oh, you know, this was meant to be a callback to VR5, that infamous failed 90s sci-fi TV series or what have you.
There's a certain there's a certain sense of like real glory when you get a chance to reveal that, though. I mean, I know I had a I'm currently writing a story that's like an 80s slasher style story, and there was three characters that were basically called Jamie, Lee, and Curtis. But the way that they, it was the way that they were all mixed up, no one really got it because I never really put the names in that sort of order. But if you read between the lines, and it always pleases me when I reveal that fact to people, there's like, you know, I've got a shit-eating grin on my face when. Yeah, so I totally get where you're coming from. Yeah,
Mary, you described it. I think at one point you're describing one of my really obnoxious, obscure references, like some Da Vinci Code level shit. It's sort of like, you know, it's the
kind
exact opposite of something like Ready Player One, where the reference just kind of smack you around the face.
Yeah.
I was doing like two levels of remove, so you not only need to know the original thing, but then you kind of need to figure out what kind of code shifting nonsense I went through to try to plausibly hide it from immediate detection. And it's terrible. Like, this travel guy that I'm working on, it's just an excuse to run rampant with this completely unacceptable behavior. But you know, that's part of what makes the writing fun. It's like,
yeah,
oh, you know, I've got space for a number or a name here. What kind of things can I sneak in here?
Awesome.
And if even one person gets it, even one person catches on, that'll be it.
Yeah.
That'll be it. I'll be pleased till the end of my days.
Well, you both must be hugely pleased with how the Kickstarter's done, because obviously pledged within 24 hours. And as we speak now, you've got 26 days left to go. So good luck.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's great. Yeah. It's terrifying. But it also really kind of, you know, it really kind of underscores the work we've done getting to this place. I mean, Mary's built up her fan base for years, and then we've been working on the comic for about 3 years after that. So it's just kind of the point where all that time and all that effort, you get to see the payoff. You get to see it crystallize into a set of really unarguable numbers.
Yeah. What is happening to the webcomic while this Kickstarter is on? Is it still running, or is it on a hiatus at the moment?
I should be drawing it like right now, but
yes,
it's been so hot, I've been basically just melting off my chair.
actually took a hiatus to get the Kickstarter up and running because, you know, Mary's, you were doing all the design work for the pins and whatnot, and I was doing some writing for stuff. And effectively, we were kind of flat out for about a month and a half. So
yeah, basically, all my weekends were taken up by like either work events or like MCM or some other stuff would come out. And I just realized at some point we have to take this hiatus because it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's better to sort of stop so you can come back stronger or like concentrate on like the important things, because the comic's not going anywhere. It's I'm guessing. Do you have an end in sight, or are you just going to keep going until you literally just can't anymore?
We have an end. We just don't know how long it's going to take to get there.
Oh, good. So there's plenty more issues of Drugs and Wires to come. And I must say that the website, drugsandwires.fail, where did you get .fail from?
I bought it where they sell domain names. They just had it, and I was like, sure, why not? It was a little bit more expensive than .com. It was like £20 a year or something, but I figured it's worth it.
It totally sums up, you know, it's totally in keeping with the nature of the story as well. You know.
I just want to know who came up with it and who made it a thing that exists.
It has a great marketing flourish, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's something you do not forget. And one of our fans actually bought up the .com domain and then gifted it to us. I was like, okay, that's good, but I think we're going to keep on advertising .fail, because that one sticks in your head.
Mm. Yeah, so
that's a great one.
Yeah, and I think there may be a few people out there who don't necessarily know about Drugs and Wires. I know a couple of our listeners mentioned when we announced you that they're going to be checking it out. So expect a few more pledges. I can see it already.
Nice.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would love that.
Yeah, and good luck with the rest of the campaign.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Filling up your shed with enamel badges.
Yeah.
That would be good.
I wish I had a shed.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe that can be one of like
the goals. Call it the drug shed.
Yeah, that could be the next Kickstarter to actually get a shed.
Maybe the next stretch goal is buying me a plane ticket so I can fly down to Nottingham and help me stuff those envelopes.
Oh, yeah.
I would be okay with that.
There we go.
So there you go. That's another excuse to check out the Kickstarter to see what else turns up on it. What else Mary gets IO to do. Brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much for talking about it, guys. Yeah,
absolutely.
It was awesome. And it was great to get the collaboration. Collaboration always intrigues me as well, especially people working like in different time zones, different countries and stuff. And to do it as seamlessly as you guys have done, to the point where you're not quite sure who's written what, I think speaks volumes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now they're going
to clearly both in cyberspace. You're clearly both the same person.
Yeah.
You've
joined. some readers thought that.
Oh, did they? Do you think one of you was made up or something? Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting though because we do have I think we're very simpatico. Like we do have a very similar style of humor and a very similar mentality. We both love terrible things, whether it's terrible architecture, technology, or so forth. But I mean, there's a 10-year age gap between us. I'm married with children.
You're clearly the younger one, are you?
And I work in a fairly dry field, and you know, Mary, you've been now liberated from the Polygon mines, but you've been a creative professional pretty much your entire adult life. But
adult. Technically adult.
But in spite of these very strong fundamental differences, you know, at the end of the day, we do, I think, see eye to eye.
That's good, isn't it? Yeah. And let's face it, cyberspace brought you together. There you go.
It's good for something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I complain.
Vince has met a lot of people off the internet, haven't you, Vince?
Don't start that, because you know people will believe it. You know I'm going to get that at the next convention now, aren't I? Someone's going to say something.
Want to do yoga with me?
Hey, don't knock the yoga, Dan.
I'm not knocking it.
Yeah. It's actually made me taller. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah, basically because I hunch everywhere. I'm like, I'm in my bell tower all the time. It's nice to stand up straight. Anyway, I owe Mary going to stick with us until the end, but we're going to recommend some books in a minute. But before we do, let's have a couple of quick shout outs. I think first, obviously, we have to say quite a big loss in the comic community was Mr. Steve Ditko this week.
Definitely.
Which, you know, in a world where the World Cup is rife and all this sort of craziness is going all over the place, it was nice to go onto social media and see an outpouring of people loving this creator's work. You know, obviously it was sad news, but quite a legacy that man left, shall we say.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It did come suddenly, and I know he's not a young man, but I backed a Kickstarter of his a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, and I bought some new comics of his from Orbital, you know, about a couple of weeks before that. And, I mean, it had a big impact. We've been talking a bit about it on the WhatsApp, haven't we? Yeah. And I found a photograph that compared what he looked like with how he drew Peter Parker, and he's essentially the model for Peter Parker in the early days. It's incredible, and that was the moment that it really brought it home to me. I mean, you know, an incredible variety of villains and characters that he designed in the early years of Spider-Man. It's just incredible stuff.
I think in the show notes, one documentary that Tony was when Jonathan Ross did In Search of Steve Ditko, which is available on YouTube, and I didn't know this until you sent me the link, Tony. So we will put a link in the show notes for that documentary because it's fascinating and very
it's,
good.
It's really, you name it, they're in it. You know what I mean? Mm. Alan Moore, Mark Miller, you know, Neil Gaiman, Paul Gambaccini, all the big UK comic creators, and they speak really. He is an extremely interesting guy, Ditko, when you get to the bottom of it, because. He was a big fan of Ayn Rand and objectivism and all this sort of thing. And that's what influenced so much. If you look at Mr. A and stuff like that, it's incredible. And there's a direct line between Mr. A and Rorschach. and all that sort of thing. A really, really interesting guy. And he basically just played by his own rules, Ditko. And he makes that very clear, Jonathan Ross. And for those people who think Jonathan Ross is that guy who does his, you know, his chat show, it's not. It's a, you know, this is a really heartfelt story. And you can see, and the best, one of the best bits is you have a look around Jonathan Ross's comic collection and you think, oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a reader comic of Amazing Fantasy 15. You know.
Bloody hell.
So, yeah. So, yeah. It's a really, I recommend it. If you go to the Facebook page, I've posted a link on there. And if anyone is not on the Facebook, just message me and I'll send you a link to it. Really good. Really good stuff. It's came out in 2007, so it's a little bit dated, but still very watchable.
Yes. Yes. Do we have any other quick shout outs?
Shout out for the Kickstarter for Errol versus Evil.
Oh, yes.
Daryl Thorpe, yeah. That's running at the moment. That's going great guns, as is the Little Heroes.
They've both made their money now, haven't they? That's great news.
That's brilliant, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're both active and running now. So pledge to those. Two great Kickstarters.
Yeah. I just want to say thanks to Pat and Lisa. Pat and Lisa Mills in Spain. I've just come back from Spain, which is why I couldn't come on last week's show.
Thank you. Thank you for looking after him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And lovely things to say, didn't he? About
We gave him a couple of issues, so expect a quote on various and every single thing we post about the comic from now on. But it's it's nice to see him enjoying it. And they were great company, and I remember one day I met them for lunch and I realized, I looked at my watch and it was like 10:30. I thought, I've been with them for like 8 hours just talking comics and, you know, books and movies. And, you know, it's just incredible. He's got such a passion for it, Pat and Lisa as well. Yeah. Just incredible people. Yeah. And if there's ever anyone that should be listened to, it's those two guys, I think. Definitely. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my one. Yeah.
And just a quick one. This coming weekend, the 14th and 15th of July, is the Comics Summit. Which has been talked about in the past, and I know it's something that John Locke's been put together. It's an opportunity. It's basically indie creators are coming together, like outside of a convention setting, to talk comics, tips and tricks, etc., and basically just talk about making comics. There's going to be a bunch of creators there: John Locke, Nick Angel, Jenny Yelblad, Matt Gibbs of Improper Books, who we haven't had on the show yet. We need to get him on at some point. Rich Hardman of Comic Printing UK, Chris Imber, Sarah Millman, Barry Nugent, Sally Jane Thompson, loads more. Oh, also, I'm going to be there.
You?
Yeah, I'm going to be there, and
I'm worth the price of the admission.
And yeah, it is, because the admission is free.
It's free.
Yeah, it's 2 days of creators talking about comics. So if you want to find out more, and you can make it down to I think it's the Cheltenham area, University of Gloucestershire. It is Saturday and Sunday, 14th, 15th, taking place between 10 and 5. It's a fairly sort of casual come and go. You know, there's no fixed thing. It's just people talking about making comics and how to sort of better things, and you know.
And on that subject, just a little shout, because I know Iz McAuliffe was going to be hosting on the panel. Yeah. She can't make it now. She's home from hospital, so get well soon.
Yes, get well soon.
Yeah,
we love you. So, but I'll probably see if I can get some audio or something. So,
okay, that's good.
We'll tell it all.
It is just a view in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know me. Won't be the first time. Yeah, but if you want to find out more, go to comicsummit.wordpress.com. There you go. So, right, it's a hot day. We're going to make it through this last bit.
Almost there.
But we're on to the recommendations. What you lovely people should be checking out, stuff that you don't know about before. Now, I think we should throw it over to our two lovely guests.
So yes.
If they've got anything that they think that our lovely listeners should check out, be it comics or whatever, what would you guys like to recommend to our listeners? Who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Go for it.
Okay.
I've run one just today, actually. It's a comic called Homunculus by Joe Sparrow.
Oh, okay. I like his stuff. Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah,
I haven't read any other of his stuff, but I just kind of saw it in my dash and I was like, I'm going to buy it. And it's a beautiful, heartfelt story about artificial intelligence. And the whole story is like from the point of view of artificial intelligence, which is a completely static box and things are just happening in front of it. And I don't really want to spoil any of it, but
that's already won me over. That I already find that fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, that was easy. No, that was great. I really liked it.
Oh, nice. Oh, now I've got to try and spell that on the links for the show notes. So that should be quite interesting.
I can link you later.
Oh, thank you.
Saucy.
You don't hear that every day. Io, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
I can toss a couple of things out there. But one that's been kind of at the top of my mind recently is Jonas Goonface has followed the leader again. I've plugged it on Twitter a fair bit, but I've drifted back into it again. And Jonas, if folks who've been kind of keeping an eye on the comic scene know that he did run on Cy Spurrier's God Shaper, did the art for that, and was actually quite well received.
Okay.
And Follow the Leader is his webcomic. And it's really fantastic stuff because, I mean, Jonas has a tremendously expressive drawing style as is. And it's this really kind of fascinating slice of Americana gone wrong. Small town USA where there's this park that's basically been taken over by this pseudo malevolent spirit. And he basically gathers children from the town into the park. And where they become this kind of feral cannibal tribe, and into this stumbles this group of mobsters. So you've got this very wonderful clash between sort of mundane small town life and then this very magical, very surreal, occasionally quite horrible cannibal versus mafia milieu happening in the middle of it. And it's beautifully colored, you know, very beautifully drawn, very expressive. It's one of those comics where you just kind of read and go, geez, I wish I could do that, you know? One of those really kind of enviable pieces of the work.
I read those every week.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing about creators is you do yourself a favor by just checking out as much out there as possible.
Yeah.
Because some people really, it's just like a master class in storytelling and composition. I mean, our friends Jen Lee and Ty Dunnitz, who do the Rising Sand.
I love that.
Just Rising Sand.
They're so good.
So good.
Yeah.
I mean, Ty's literally crippled himself over just trying to make each page as visually brilliant as possible. You look at what those guys put out there, the colors, the expressions.
Yeah.
Even the lettering is a minor work of art in and of itself sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely need to get them on the show one day in the future.
Yeah.
Please
yeah,
do.
You're a big fan of that.
Then he can give me stick for calling it the Rising Sand. It's a running joke. It's a running joke.
I will bring it up. I will bring it up. Yeah, awesome. Okay, then. Dan or Tony, who wants to go first?
Go on, you go, Dan.
Yeah, go. I picked this one off Blind of Comixology.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. Bums.
There's no way you didn't pick that by just the title. That way.
So there was kind of like, I think because I bought other small press stuff, like it recommended this, and I got it just like looking at the first few preview pages. The bums in the title refer to homeless people, which is a shame because I would like to see more bums throughout. But the guy's obviously an artist and not so much a writer because the artwork on this is absolutely fantastic, but the story goes nowhere. I mean, he would do so well if he got together with a writer to kind of push his stuff in a direction. Essentially, there's a homeless guy, he walks down the road, goes into a subway, and there's four or five suited assassins that follow him. And then it ends with them pulling guns on each other, and it says to be continued. But this was done like a couple of years ago, so I don't think there's continuation coming anytime soon.
So what actually drew you to it? That, I mean, obviously we'll joke about the name.
No, yeah, it was kind of like the visual style, because you know if you can get like the preview of the first four pages.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is just absolutely fantastic. The artwork is great.
Yeah.
And I bought it on that alone. And but when you kind of get into it, there's it's all style and no substance, sadly.
Yeah.
But
worth checking out for the art status.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some social media links to the guy who's, let me get his name, Joseph, I think it's Joseph Discolor. He's got an Instagram account and some other stuff. You take a look at his work, it's absolutely fantastic. I'm not quite sure what he's doing nowadays, but the sequential work is great, really, really nice, really vivid. It's something I ain't seen before, and God, yeah.
That's what we need more of in comics, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah,
so. Very simplistic, but like there's a ton of detail and atmosphere in all the panels. yeah, I love the visual style, but kind of.
You just wish it had more bums.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't.
False advertising.
I was going to give it a poor review on Comixology, saying there's not quite enough bum action for me.
I looked it up and I'm not seeing any bumps on the cover either.
I remember being in Holland many years ago and seeing a VHS tape that was entitled Shit Piss Fuck 2, and I've got to tell you, that lived up to the title.
Oh my god.
Do I dare ask?
Yeah. It's not too much play in that, is there though?
No,
really, from that title.
Yeah. I never found volume 3, but 2 was alright.
Perhaps it'll go on Kickstarter.
Do you feel like he was kind of dumped literally straight into the story there with volume 2? you didn't need one.
They dropped you straight into the action.
Yeah, I knew your recommend was going to do this to the show, Dan. I knew this was going to happen.
Brought it down a notch.
Tony.
So yeah, mine's more of a recommendation to check out the artist as opposed to the comic.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
I'm always getting nice art. What have you got, Tony?
After months of us begging, you know, and writing begging letters, we eventually got on the comp list for Europe Comics. Yay! How cool are we?
Thank you, Europe Comics. That's awesome.
Yeah. We're very excited about that. Yeah. We love them, and they sent me a few through. One of the ones they sent through. Have you had a chance to read Gypsy yet, guys?
I've had a look at it. It's crazy.
Fucking mental, yeah. It's Gypsy, the Gypsy Star. Now, it's the first of, I think, the 7 volumes so far. 67 pages, full colour by Europe, published digitally only by Europe Comics. It's got a 17-plus rating. Scripts by Thierry Smolderan, art by Enrico Marini, more about him in a second. Translated by Joe Johnson, and, as I say, there's 6 volumes, pardon me, from a Bon Destiny publisher. It's set in the mid-21st century and the Northern Hemisphere is hit by a glacial period. The world's political situation has also gone down the toilet. Air traffic is virtually zero due to the ozone. So instead, everyone in it is in big lorries or big trains on a huge transcontinental highway. Boys dream not of being pilots or, you know, footballers or anything, but of driving these huge trucks. And I think you'll like this, Dan, because all the trucks are fitted out with machine guns and, you know, armor, and they've got like they've got all various things going on. Machine guns mounted on the top, they fire at each other, and it's a real sort of cutthroat world.
Yeah.
It opens with a guy called Sargi. Sargi, and he's fighting off some other kids who are in the playground who are attacking his sister, who's called Oblivia. And he tells her he's just going to escape the ghetto, and he heads off to learn. He wants to be involved in the truck driving business. He promises his sister he'll be back to her, and he makes. After he makes piles of cash, and he's then attacked by a man whose clothes he'd stolen, and he kills this man with this geezer's own shotgun. And it turns out this is the headmaster of the school that he leaves his sister at. But he leaves her with this sort of sculpted wolf's head as he legs it off, and she sort of keeps it in her hand. And then you flash forward to see this guy, and he's a grown man. He's in this like nutty sort of frozen. Like icy Mad Max kind of environment, and his sister turns up as sort of a reasonably grown up girl, and then they escape off in the truck, and then he takes her, obviously he says I need to do some business, so he takes her to a stripper's bar. Obviously it's where you take your long lost sister to, and there are nudity issues with this. There's a lot of nudity. It's quite an adult sort of book. And while they're talking, there's literally next to them, there's a woman who would apparently be showing everyone in the bar her internal organs on a pole next to them. So it's kind of got that sort of erotic, violent Euro thing going on. A guy then sort of jumps in, and he's got like a big maple leaf tattooed across his face. And as he's sort of sticking his tongue out at this guy's sister, that Sargi just cuts his tongue in half with a really sharp knife.
Jesus.
It's full on, absolutely. Sargi's in the habit of just shouting out weird phrases. I wrote a couple down. They need arms and not for chasing hedgehogs. So that's something he shouts at someone.
What?
Yeah, I don't even know what that means. I hope that's not a problem in translation, because that just had me laughing.
That's the best.
Yeah. My dick in your house, my balls in your yard, you fuck. That's one of the things he shouts at someone. And my personal one is he's standing on the top of his truck and he shouts, I'll shit in your pockets at some people he's getting on with. which is kind of a bit of a catchphrase of mine now, I've decided. So there's more than that. There's obviously going on. And, you know, there's sort of shady businesses and pseudo-military assassins and a missing heiress who you kind of get a sense of what's going on. It's, as I say, it's very 18 certificate.
Yeah.
It's a cross between kind of Mad Max, Snowpiercer, bit Ice Road Truckers, and with that sort of Euro craziness. The artwork is absolutely outstanding, I've got to tell you.
There was a slight sort of... Eastern influence to it.
Yeah, there's a manga influence there. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, you can see that. I think that of everything, and probably in the faces, you know?
Yeah.
And there's, as typical Euro comics and European comics in general, there's no shortcuts taken on this volume. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Super violent, guns, rocket launchers, knives, armored tanks, everything you'd want in that sort of thing. There's ends on a cliffhanger, almost literally.
Oh, I love the name Cliffhammer, though. Oh, I'm using that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Get that down. Write that down. Yeah.
Cliffhammer.
Yeah. I looked up the creators. The writer is Thierry Smolderen. He's from Brussels. He works on some erotic stories from some other books, and he's written some Sonic the Hedgehog. So I'm not sure whether they join together, but I'd read an erotic Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't know.
Well, he's screaming off shit in your pockets. Jesus.
Yeah, he runs around. Some really
good
fast.
News about the internet for you.
Oh, go on. Yeah.
That's DeviantArt, basically.
Yeah.
The artist Enrico Marini, he's a fucking rock star now. I've got to tell you, he's immediately gone to one of my favourite artists.
Yeah.
You can see he's got the influence of Bond SNA, along with manga and also American comics. You can see some real influences all over the place from him.
And the vehicles look astonishing, I must say.
Oh, yeah. So good. He drew the Eagles of Rome as well, which is on Comixology, and Desert Star. Both you can get from Europe Comics. Both are absolutely gorgeous. I'm going to say a little bit of Richard Corbin. I'm going to say a little bit of that in there as well.
Yeah,
I throw that sort of nastiness into the mix, you know. Really great stuff. If you go to www.europecomics.com, I'd suggest you sign up for their mailer. Not really good mailer, actually. They give a load of freebies away as well. Or if you follow them at Europe Comics on Twitter. They are only digital distribution of European comics, because I don't think the market holds up for the print copies to be a financial benefit to them.
Yeah.
So as I'm a complete convert to digital comics, this is a real go-to one for me.
I mean, since we discovered like Europe Comics on this show, just the volume of like recommends that we've done on this show from them,
it's probably 10 or so, I reckon.
And certainly, you know, if there was one, The Swordmaster, which is one of my favourite books
it's so good
that, you know, even though I'm not fluent in French, I still wanted the French book. So, you know, Chris Sides very kindly picked it up for me while he was in France.
That's some beautiful art, mate.
It's just
astounding. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. As an aside, I'd also recommend The Mermaid Project, which is, I think, 6 volumes, in and out story. Amazing. Just amazing. Some of the best whales you'll see drawn in a comic for a long time. Oh, it reminded me a bit of... what was the shark book we read years ago? About a year ago.
Oh, God.
Carthago.
Yeah. It reminds me a bit of, you get that sort of real feeling of the deep water and the whale swimming up underneath. Yeah, just gorgeous stuff. So a little thank you to Irina Polianina. There you go. For hooking us up with that. And I'll certainly be sitting in this in the show notes. So have a look at this book. Definitely. Yeah. Really, really good. There you
awesome.
Go. That's my one.
Okay. Nice. Just to sign us off, I got one, and it's a book that I've been meaning to pick up for a while now. I've been following this creator. It's The Realist by Asaf Haneke.
I have that book. It's great.
Oh, have you got this book? Oh,
I've been following
his work online for ages, so when he released it, I had to have it.
It was pretty much fabulous. Similar to me. He's an Israeli cartoonist from Tel Aviv who's been doing like weekly strips, I think, for years now. And I know this book's been out for a little. It's volume one of two. There's two volumes, I know, but it's the first collective volume, and I haven't. It's been out for a little while, and this is the first collective volume of those said strips. As it says on the back, it's collected for the first time in English, and it includes some never before seen strips. Pretty much all sort of one page comics. Now, whether it's a 9-panel grid, like 4 panels or splash pages. He sort of plays with the format as like the ideas seem appropriate. But to say what this book is, this isn't a strict sort of narrative story. It's sort of autobiographical, melancholic, thought-provoking strips, many of which have like a real sort of social activist slant to them, and they do have a real message. But I don't know, where do I start with it? I would honestly say that this is an absolute, I mean, I use the word masterclass, and this book is a masterclass of artistic creativity, the likes of which I haven't read for quite some time. And I tell you, it will proudly be accompanied
by...
By
volume. Did you get a hard copy? Is this a hard copy you got?
The hardback book is the one I've got.
Right, okay.
And it's a beautiful book. I mean, the one I've got is Archaea, which I think they're the ones that
okay.
are on,
yeah, yeah.
on
Mouse,
Amazon.
Mouse Guard and stuff like that,
They put out lovely hardcover books. But this is just phenomenal stuff. It takes you sort of from real life, sort of intimate, and often like there are some sort of hilarious examples of like the daily struggles, like big and small, that he'll switch from that to some very sort of visceral punch in the gut moments. Like it's stuff.
Yeah,
that
was very bleak for a slice of life comic.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I like some of the pages, it will literally suck the air out of your lungs, and I think more importantly, it makes you think about what he's actually talking about and what he's saying. Which I think is a massive strength of this kind of work. It's not just, you know, he does have a point to things, and it does sound heavy, and it as Mary said, it is quite bleak in a lot of places.
Okay.
Sometimes,
but
the bits where he describes, like, you know, the realities of living in Israel with everything going on, like those bits that
it gets quite dark. Yeah, there are sort of dark moments.
There's some great creators in Tel Aviv. You know, I know. Yeah. Israel gets a bit of a terrible name, but sometimes that sort of siege mentality of the country produces some amazing art, you know.
Yeah,
incredible stuff.
And this is very much in that sort of format. You know, he's sending brilliant messages, and like it may sound heavy, but you know, he's got a lot to say about some sort of political subjects. But that's not to say that this isn't without his lighter strips. And I think like he's got such a zippy sort of self-deprecating sort of look at himself. And like the artist's daily grind, some of it's quite sad, but there are moments. Like there's one strip where he wakes up in the middle of the night and he just sits straight up out of bed, and he seems to turn into a werewolf, and it's purely because he's hungry, and he rushes down to the fridge, pretty much consumes everything in the fridge, and then he's sleeping like a baby at the end because the beast has been fed.
It's very relatable.
Yeah, very, very relatable indeed. And a lot of these are quite related. There were like a lot of moments where one of my favourite strips, I mean, some of the splash pages, you know, you could put these, if they were a cover of a comic book, you could name any of them as like a cover of the year sort of subject. There's one where he's just got his head in his hands and he's at the garage and his car's up and the mechanic's basically saying, "I'm sorry, there was nothing we could do." His car's essentially dead. But the inside of the car, instead of an engine, it's like organs and entrails hanging out of the car, you know. And I looked at that and I thought, yeah, I know how that feels. I totally know how that feels. And there's love. I think my favourite bit, my favourite page, is there's a strip called "Of Course I'm Listening." Every strip has its own title, and you can just, it's got that great sort of coffee table sort of feel. You can pick it up, read a page, and then put it down again. Although I challenge you to just read one page. You're going to read a lot when you pick this book up. But one of them is "Of Course I'm Listening." And there's his wife. They're sat in a coffee shop and his wife's got her head in her hands. She's obviously upset about something. And he's sat on the opposite side of the table with a cup of coffee in his hands. But he's dressed up like an astronaut and he's staring into space. Literally into space. And I just love that sort of visual play on sort of words and things like that. It's just amazing.
What led you to this, mate? How did you discover it?
I've seen him on Twitter, and you know the artwork is such that you don't skim past it. I don't know whether it was a retweet, but I've been following him for quite some time, and he is pretty regular. I think he's got like 20,000 followers and stuff. And I'm not sure where he's published. I know this book is actually like an Eisner Award winner. And
and
it says here a New York Times bestseller as well. So I may be preaching to some. Yeah, to some converted out there, for instance, like Mary knew all about it, which is wonderful. But maybe some of our listeners haven't heard of this guy. and this work, and I urge you to amend that immediately and seek out his work.
And I would actually recommend another book where he's the artist along with, I think, his brother. It's called The Divine, if you've heard of it.
Oh, I've heard of it, but I haven't read it. Yeah,
it's beautiful, but obviously it's a different subject matter. Yeah. It deals with like child soldiers and magic and war.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you like the art style, I would absolutely recommend it. It's a beautiful book.
Yeah. I mean, I could say a lot of influences that, you know, when I looked at the art style, oh, it reminded me of this artist or this artist, you know, some of my favourites. But, you know, I don't want to do that. Just see it for yourself, because you'll immediately become a fan of this man's work. I mean, the cover itself, there's a lot of, like, nice moments with his son and his family. There's another page called Rain, where his son's looking out of a window at a rainy day. He's obviously in wonderment, he's looking at the rain, where his father's instead got his head in his hands looking up at the wall because there's a damp patch appearing on the top of the room. So, yeah, definitely check out this. You can follow him on Twitter at Realist Comics. You probably get this in a lot of bookstores. I mean, I got it from Amazon. I don't know, where did you pick it up from, Mary? Was it Amazon or...?
Oh, I can't say, it's been so long ago. Yeah. Probably Amazon.
Yeah. I mean, I think it came out in 2015, I think, late 2015.
I think I probably pre-ordered it, so wherever they advertised it, that's where I picked it up from.
Yeah. But it's well worth your money. Hardcover book that will sit proudly in your collection, along with Volume 2. That's the one that's immediately gone to the top of my wish list on Amazon. So there you go.
I didn't know there was
going to
be another one.
Yeah, I saw it. It's one of those classics when I went to buy this one. Oh, you know, people also bought this. You know, that sort of shilling that they do on Amazon. So, yeah, I think it's a companion piece. I think the two books, I don't think he's going to do lots and lots of volumes. I think there's volume one and volume two. So, yeah, there you go. There's one to add to your wish list.
Nice.
That's what we do on this show. We put people out of
pocket.
Spread the love. Yeah. We make them upset at us for spending all their money. But yeah, and we've done it again with a load of fantastic recommendations this week. So yeah, thank you for those to our lovely guests. I've got a bunch of stuff here that I need to check out, as well as doing the show notes. But yeah, we hope you people out there enjoyed this week's show. Whether we mucked up a name, or maybe we just talked about something that you loved and you want to talk about it more, you can get in touch with us and let us know about it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've read Awesome Comics, our anthology book we're putting out, and you want us to send us a letter, Tony Esmond is the
letter. I'm in charge of the letters.
He's in charge of the letters. God help us. But you can send the letters to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. And Dan, the man butcher, where can people get the comic?
If you go to our Big Cartel store, which is the Awesome Comic Pod BigCartel.com.
I think I need to
write that link down.
Yeah, look, we're not natural salesmen. We just make comics. We don't really think about selling them. Yeah, but definitely pick it up. Yes, you can follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod, where we'll be announcing what we're going to talk about on the next show, etc. And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. If you like doing Facebook and you like joining groups, there's only one group you need to join, and this is one that actually talks about comics and making comics. And none of this hard selling, there's no sales pitches or whatever. You go to Awesome Comics Talk, and you join a growing and fantastic community of comics fans and creators. And we love it there.
We do.
Yeah, we do. We love each and every one of you. Thank you for listening, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen on iTunes, leave us a review, subscribe, help get the word out about the show. And if you do Spotify, we are now on Spotify.
Yay.
Yeah, we're too legit to quit. I don't know. It's hot. I think I'm dehydrated. It's getting to that time of the show. But yes, please, we're on Spotify now. So if that's how you listen to your audio, you can find us there with all the latest episodes. And if you listen to us on the Stitcher Network, the Podnose Network, the Podknife Network, what are the networks we on, Tony?
Pod, fuck off, Jamie.
I love the fact it was Pud.
Pud.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was.
That's
fuck off, Jamie.
That was an interior joke for us that will always make us laugh. But where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. Never on anything.blogspot.co.uk. And also, on the 5th of August, look up the True Believers Summer Event. Me and Vince will be running panels at that, and we'll also be selling issues of the comic. So come along. It's going to be a proper laugh. So I'm sure we'll be pimping it again next week. But yeah, the summer events is looking like the weather's going to be good. So come along for a little garden party.
Oh my word. Garden party. Ooh. Bloody hell. Where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me online on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Which is back and firing on all cylinders.
Thank you.
Yeah. I left it a couple of weeks and I caught up this week, Dan. So, you know.
Awesome.
It's not that I don't love you. I just need, I want to read a couple of pages at once.
No, yeah, I'm the same. Read it. I kind of like leave it for a month or two and then read a batch and then move on.
Yeah. Yeah, but you should read it because it's ace. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Mary and Io, thank you again for joining us this evening.
Yes.
On this
Thanks
hot...
for having us.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been good. A pleasure. And it's kind of felt like it's coming full circle because you guys were, I think, one of the first outlets to really cover us as a comic.
Oh, nice. Thank you, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. Nice.
It was like episode 32 or somewhere in that ballpark.
He remembers everything I told him.
He did.
Many aeons ago. So,
I say, Mary, I'm a little worried that he is actually not a real person. He is just a computer program that you've invented.
It's a possibility.
Yeah. Great publicity.
I like to keep guessing.
Think of it. Yeah. It's working. So the Max Headroom of Germany. There you go. How's that?
Amazing.
Max Kopfraum.
Oh dear.
But where can people find you guys online, etc., and your brilliant Kickstarter and comic book?
It's gone quiet.
Yes.
We're very good about
self promotion. You can find me on Twitter at B_IowaLogic because every other permutation of Iowa and Black was taken, amazingly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or on Tumblr at Black Io Chronicles, all one word, .tumblr.com. And that's pretty much it, unless you swing by our Discord channel, and we should probably post the link to that again soon. A little difficult to read out over the air.
I could put it in the show notes. What have I said?
Yeah.
Yeah, send it to us.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where can people find you, Mary?
On Twitter, it's cryoclaire242, and every other resource available out there, just cryoclaire.
Nice. Cool. And it's nice. drugsandwires.fail. And
yep.
How awesome. Can you forget that? And I guess just search for it on Kickstarter, and it'll come up. Drugs and Wires. I can't think of anything else that's going to have that name.
I hope not.
Yeah. Don't go to the
There's
going
to have to be words if there is.
Yeah. And don't go to the dark web and look it up. There's probably various.
Oh my god. Yeah. Not on that very dark bombshell. Thank you to our guests. Thank you, lovely people, for listening. And from Dan, Tony, Mary, Io, and myself. Cool, that was quite a list this week. I'm not used to doing that many. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Get in some web comics. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya. See ya.
Dan.
Hello, Dan. You there? Dan.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello, mate.
Are you alright? Hello?
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Dan. Dan, are you there?
Dan.
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 Dan. He can hear us. Dan.
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 Dan! 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 Dan!
No, he's not seeing me. I'll get him later.